Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Utica and got his first break in radio when a disc jockey had to go to the bathroom. He eventually bought 25 radio stations and sold them in 2000 for $121 million. Since then, he's bought big boy restaurants out of bankruptcy, 5 radio stations in the Port Huron area, a local movie theater, and founded a high-speed wireless internet provider. His name, Bob Liggett. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Our guest tonight, Bob Liggett. Bob, welcome. It's an honor.
It's a pleasure to be here too, Jack.
Can we start by telling about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I was born right at the end of the war in Beaumont, Texas, and they traveled to a couple of jobs. My dad was an actor and a radio performer in the days when radio had performers. And he was in Beaumont, worked at a real small station, went to Kansas City, and I was, of course, a baby at this time. About the time I realized where I was, it was Pontiac, Michigan, and Dad was working for a station called WCAR. That was a short-lived job, and then he moved to Saginaw and worked at WSAM, a radio station there. And he was a news director and a program director at that station. And I used to listen to him do the news at noon. Then he'd come home, and I would be there, having walked from my little first grade and kindergarten classes back home. We had lunch, and I was just amazed. What a terrific deal. I listened to my dad on the radio. I loved the radio, of course. In those days, it was the only kind of entertainment you had. You had it all in your head. And in about 1950, radio really began to change. We knew television was going to happen. Dad decided he was going to go into the creative services at the industrial movie business, or the industrial film business, which included slide films and movies here in Detroit, which was a huge industry. A Jam Handy organization, Ross Roy, some of the big studios were here, teaching the salesmen how to sell cars and the service people how to service cars. And he came down and turned his creative talents to writing these films. And we moved to the Lakeshore Village Apartments on Jefferson Avenue in St. Clair Shores, Michigan, which is about 1.8 miles from where I live right now. And I started enjoying a great childhood along Lake St. Clair. We lived there until about 1956, and we moved to Utica, Michigan. 25-mile road in Van Dyke. And it was there that I began to really decide that I wanted to take a ride with my dad to Pontiac, Michigan, where he had a part-time job at WPON, the radio station there at 1460 on the dial in the Waldron Hotel. And it was while I was there that I began to hang around, and I had a chance to learn something about the radio business. We had a wonderful time in the St. Clair Shores, Utica area, and it was the 50s, and life was so much different than it is today.
How did you get the first job in radio?
Well, I always say I was hanging around, and I got a chance to sit with all the different disc jockeys who were just amazing. They were playing the Hi-Los and the Four Lads, and Johnny Mathis was coming on the scene, and it was a very exciting time. Of course, rock and roll was beginning to start. We didn't play much of that at WPON, but at any rate, I was just fascinated. And any time I could sit in a studio and be near this great medium, I was there. And it so happens that one of the guys had to leave for a trip to the bathroom one night, asked the kid, "Can you segue a couple of records for me?" Well, sure. You know, I'd been around it for a few months at that point. And eventually I got good enough, so they put me on Sunday mornings, which was definitely the lowest rung on the ladder, and filing records in the record library. And so that was my first job in about 1957 at Pontiac. And I moved on to a little closer to my home, which was Mount Clemens, Michigan, WBRB in Mount Clemens, where a guy by the name of Milt Maltz started his broadcasting company, which turned out to be one of the greatest broadcasting companies, Malrite Corporation.
One of your favorite expressions is, "I just hung around." Can a young person today hang around and get a job somewhere?
You know, I guess it has to be a little tougher today, although I would still think in smaller markets especially, somebody can do it, especially at remotes and other places like that. But today you have a different world. When I was growing up, there was no broadcast school at U of M or Michigan State or Wayne. There were no Specs Howard schools, trade schools. So we just did that. You were talented as an announcer or an entertainer, and they would hire you if you could show that you were talented. And a lot of people just kind of came out of nowhere and proved their talent and got a job. Much different than today, where they'll ask you for a degree or for some experience. Always experience, though, is just hanging around.
How did you ever buy / accumulate 25 radio stations?
Well, that's an amazing question when you think about it, because I often marvel that I was able to make some decisions and take some of the chances that it took in business. I remember, though, as a young teenage guy, well, some guys were dreaming of hot rod machines and girls and maybe being in bands, I used to sit around and I thought, boy, I loved radio. It was the thing I just thought was the greatest. And I used to doodle in my classes when I'm daydreaming about how I could put a little radio station on the air in the neighborhood. And I would write down the rent, and a telephone would cost so much, and a transmitter would cost so much. And it was a great little hobby and a great little fascination of mine. And for some reason, I just had the idea virtually all my life that if I could dream it, I could make it happen. And I practiced in my mind, you know, as to what these things would cost and how you would put it all together. And by the time I got out of law school, having worked here at WJR and some of the other Detroit stations, I guess I was ready, and I felt I can do that.
We're talking to Bob Liggett, and he had radio stations in New York, Minnesota, California, Ohio, South Carolina, and Michigan. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're talking to Bob Liggett, who in 2000 sold the last of his 9 stations to Citadel Communications for $121 million. Bob, why did you do it?
Well, again, I often marvel at the fact that I did things that were really difficult decisions all through my life. I mean, it's difficult when you decide that you're going to go into business and take these chances. And then I went through buying and selling radio stations for 30 years. We operated out of Lansing, Michigan, which is where the first radio station was purchased. I remember when I was working here at WJR and doing the Detroit Red Wings. I was the announcer at Olympia Stadium for about 7 years. And I had gotten out of law school at Wayne. I admitted to the bar there in Oakland County, and I was kind of saying, do I want to go on with the career that I had mapped out for myself, which was to work my way through law school, practice law, and become president of the United States. That was kind of what I had in mind. But I had, by that time, realized that some of those goals were not too reasonable. And I decided the law was brand new to me, and I was doing pretty well here. I was doing a nice living, and I'd have to take a pay cut to go to a law firm or to start my own law firm. So I decided at that particular point to stick with radio. I knew something about that, and I bought a little radio station in Lansing, Michigan, an FM station at a time when FM was very, very new and was not on car radios and not on every radio. And while I was I thought I'd work at WJR, and I'd have my little radio station with trainer wheels on it. And nope, Bill James decided that we can't have an announcer owning a radio station that theoretically competed in a way with the WJR. So he showed me the door, and I became a full-time radio owner and operator at that particular time. And we kept buying stations, and I built a very nice team of people, and we had a terrific time for, as I say, 30 years that I owned that particular radio group. And 30 years later, radio had become a little stale. I'm a guy that cannot do the same thing over and over and over again. When I was sitting here and doing the J.P. McCarthy program and sitting in for the all-night shows and doing the things that I did as an announcer, I knew that I was not that type of person. Joe could come in and talk about sports and do the same thing every day, and people loved it, and he kept you abreast, but I got bored. I couldn't do it over and over and over again. And I did radio over and over and over again, buying and selling radio stations, and I think it just became something that I had done. And now it was changing. We were getting cable, and we were getting a lot of different media that were competing with us. Citizens Band Radio at one time looked like a big threat. And today, of course, we have 15 different things that take audience share away from radio stations. And I just decided that I had done enough of it, and the price was right. As it turned out, my timing was especially good, because almost immediately after I sold the radio stations, the market kind of crashed, and I wound up thinking I had looked pretty smart the day before, but then having put some of my money into the marketplace, I didn't look so smart the day after when the market went down. And so it was just, I think, a matter of the time had come. And of course, I was afraid to get out of the radio business, having been in it for so long. And I did acquire the radio stations in Port Huron, Michigan. And with my partner, Jim Jensen, who is operating those stations with me now, we've continued to have a hand in the broadcasting business.
No sooner you sell the radio stations and then you buy Big Boy Restaurant out of bankruptcy for $25 million. So you go from broadcasting to burgers. Why?
Well, I got to tell you that my wife was a waitress at the Big Boy Restaurant, as a lot of people in this area were connected with Big Boy. A lot of people worked there at one time or another. And she worked her way through her high school days and her early college days as a waitress at 13 Mile and Woodward Avenue, where she grew up. And I loved the Big Boy hamburger. And so I had an affinity, like most people in Detroit do. And Big Boy was in such trouble that it was really faced with extinction. The brand might have gone on with a different owner, but they would have eliminated all the people that work here. And there's hundreds of people, wonderful people, who were working hard to keep that brand going. And I got to meet them. A friend of mine named Dan Follis, who was also a broadcaster, introduced me to Tony Michaels. And Tony started at age 13 at the Big Boy Company. His father worked there for 40 years and retired from the Big Boy Company, the Elias Brothers Company. And they had deep roots, and Tony was the CEO, kind of forced into the job at the last minute as the company was going down the tubes. And he was looking for some way to find a buyer, an investor, someone who would keep the company local and could save it from actually going into the hands of a outside third party. And when I looked at the people and when I looked at the company and the brands that they had, I really thought that we had something here that could be saved and should be preserved. And it was the first thing I did after I had kind of closed out my broadcasting career.
The world-famous logo of the fat little boy, how did that come about?
Well, that goes all the way back to 1936. And a family called the Wyans. Bob Wyan was from Pasadena, California, Glendale, actually. And he had a little shack, as a lot of these restaurant companies had. And there was a fellow who was a big eater, and he came in and he said, "I want a big hamburger." And they put two patties on a bun and turned it into the double-decker, the first one probably ever seen by man. And the guy was a big guy, and they called him Big Boy, and they named the sandwich after him. And that started in 1936. It was the original and the forerunner of the Big Mac, which was really taken virtually wholesale from the Big Boy Company. And Ray Kroc took over and called it the Big Mac. But it was the beginning of the Big Boy and the beginning of that brand.
What's been the biggest surprise in these last 6 years with Big Boy Restaurant?
Well, I don't have too many surprises in life. I check things out pretty well and know what's coming. But I think the enjoyment that I have had with my involvement with the Big Boy Company has been quite amazing. In the broadcasting business, it was a love of my life. And I honestly thought the world rose and set, the sun rose and set on broadcasting. And that everybody cared about their radio station and everybody knew what was going on. I have had this wonderful experience now, having decided and taking this great chance of selling something that I was very, very deeply involved with, to see so many wonderful opportunities and so many terrific things that are going on. So not only was Big Boy a great surprise, but other enterprises and other things that were coming my way in the last 5 or 6 years has opened my eyes that the world is a wonderful, amazing place with lots and lots of different things that you can do to have fun and even make some money once in a while.
We're talking to Bob Liggett, who in 1999 was elected to the Michigan Association of Broadcasters Hall of Fame. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Bob Liggett, who got his start in the radio business at age 14. Bob, what's it like to take your wife, Vicky, who was a waitress in high school and college at Big Boy Restaurants, and your three daughters, to Big Boy Restaurants, and also what do you order when you go?
Well, it's always a joy. I'm very proud of this company. I'm very, very deeply involved with the people and the traditions, and it is a wonderful company, and I kind of bask in that a little bit and enjoy meeting the people and looking around. I think as an owner and a person who's that involved, I go to see how the operations are going, see how everybody's working to make our customers happy. And, of course, they work real hard, and we are always very happy, and we enjoy it. My daughters love it, and my wife loves it, and we have a wonderful time at Big Boy. Now, what do I order when I go in? I'm always testing different things. Most of the time, I really would rather have a Big Boy. I have a Big Boy Jones I remember almost all my life. I would always go for a week or two or three, and then I'd have to swing into a Big Boy in East Lansing or Saginaw or Flint or someplace where we had radio stations as I was on the road tending to the broadcasting business. But I always go back to the Big Boy combination, and I love the strawberry. I like the sundaes, although the pies are great too, but I like the ice cream and the strawberries with some chocolate sauce on it.
Why are some franchisees more successful than other franchisees?
Well, I think that goes back to the fact that everybody has a level and degree of success, and different people work harder, different people sort of see certain things. And for the most part, we help all of our franchisees, and we keep them on their toes. We have inspections all the time, and we have a wonderful, wonderful group of franchisees, as well as the 27 stores that the company owns right now. I would say, again, though, that's just a matter of individual people and their place in life. Some are, you know, having difficulties and the business slips a little bit. Maybe in a personal way, they're having a problem, and then sometimes there are other people who are new and fresh, and of course their stores are always right on top. So I think on the whole, though, we've had a wonderful time, and we haven't had to eliminate too many franchisees for non-performance or difficulties in getting them on the same page. The Big Boy formula, the brand, it's a terrific brand. I remember when I started looking at the company, and I said to myself, you know, what would Warren Buffett do? You know, trying to compare myself to Warren Buffett was a little a bit of a reach, but I remember reading a story where he talked about the three-legged stool of a solid brand with unique products. And if you have that, then people will beat a path to your door. And then he always talked about the people and being able to have the right people, people dedicated and people who work hard. And we had both of those things. And, of course, there was great potential for growth, which was the other three-legged part of his stool that he described in one newsletter that I read. And so I said, you know, if it fits, I'm going to give it a try, which is why I took the chance. And I think that Big Boy has proven to be one of the great joys of my life.
When we come back, we'll ask Bob Leggett about one of his latest ventures, SpeedNet LLC. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Bob Leggett, who recently founded a high-speed internet provider entitled SpeedNet LLC. Bob, you've gone from broadcasting to burgers to an internet provider. What does that do?
Well, it is a very fast wireless approach to delivering broadband to homes and automobiles and moving vehicles. That is a new era in broadband delivery. It's going to be just like cell phones, ubiquitous all over the world. And we had a person come to me who had a license for some of that spectrum space in Alpena, Michigan. And when I looked at it, I couldn't quite figure out what the heck we were going to do with it. I didn't fully understand it. I never have. I never understand how I can talk into a microphone or be on television and all of a sudden people see it. It's very mysterious to me. But at any rate, I thought the spectrum space licensed by the FCC has value no matter what. So I figured someday somebody would come back and say, gee, I need that little piece of spectrum in Alpena to finish off my coverage of the state of Michigan. And I went ahead and invested in it blindly in a way. But John Ogren, a friend of mine who I've known for a long time and who ran several different cable companies, the last of which was a Comcast division that served New Haven and Port Huron, knew all about it. He speaks the language. He'd been selling cable along with video for Comcast for a long, long time, entertainment. And so we founded this company about right at the very beginning of this era of two-way high-speed wireless over the air. And we began with the idea that we would serve the rural parts of Michigan that couldn't get good coverage from cable companies because there weren't enough people out there in the cornfields, but they still wanted to get dial-up, or they wanted to get away from dial-up and get to the high-speed modem business. And we've been through two or three different generations of equipment now so that it's very, very efficient. And, of course, we've expanded the business. Our business now starts up in the Alpena area and covers Saginaw, Bay City, the Thumb. And that's the first company called SpeedNet LLC. And we have begun to take customers away from some of the cable companies because we've been able to provide a lower-cost solution, concentrating specifically on delivering this broadband service. We also had an opportunity to bid here in the Detroit area for the metropolitan Detroit area for this very service, which is coming to fruition right now. It was owned by the Community Television Network, which is a conglomerate of schools and educational authorities here in the metropolitan area, including Channel 56 and Wayne State University. And as a Wayne State alumni and a Detroiter, we thought we'd take a shot, even though it was Bob Leggett pretty much all alone with my little company. And our competition was people like Sprint. And I'm thinking, what am I doing here with Sprint on one side of the bidding and Bob on the other? But we did have the opportunity to be the David versus Goliath. We could do things quickly. We can build this thing immediately. And we were prepared to do it, and we have the capital to do it. So we went ahead and bid on it, and were granted the franchise along with other people who got parts of this franchise, and we're getting ready to build it right now. We have some contractual relationships that have to be worked out, but our company will begin building probably this summer about 100 cell sites, and we call them cell sites right now because I don't know exactly how else to describe each cell. But just like a cellular telephone company, we will be building this out over the Detroit area. And then you'll be able to open your laptop any place, and instead of a unlicensed FCC, unlicensed frequency like they use, say, at a Starbucks or a hotel lobby, which is kind of like citizen band radio, where people have little hotspots where they can hook you into the internet by using it in that little area, you'll be able to use it over the entire metropolitan area. And we have a partner who is going to build out the Grand Rapids area. So the whole state will be lit up here, and we will be one of the very first states. Our little company was one of the first companies to get into this thing, and now we will be one of the first states with a large metropolitan area to have this service. And it will become, I think, the norm. People will get it immediately with their new computer boxes as well as with their laptops. And if you have older equipment, you can get a little antenna and receive it. But it's coming very soon, and it's very exciting.
Few of us earn a living doing what we love to do. Outwardly, appearance-wise, you just do that over and over and over. What would you say to young people who have a dream? They know what they love to do, but they say, I could never make a living doing that.
I often ponder that because, again, so much of what happens in life, I guess, is luck. I've had a tremendous life and a wonderful time watching the world change from World War II and into this amazing world that we live in today. Every day there was a new discovery. Every day there was a step forward in technology and entertainment and broadcasting. And so I can only say that I am just blessed and have had absolutely the most fantastic time that I could ever imagine watching the world go by and doing the things that I would love to do. I mean, I would have paid WJR for a chance to be here in the studios. I was lucky I got paid to be here. And the same is true with all these opportunities. So I often think that it's just luck. But I think people do make their own luck, and sometimes it has to do with just a mindset, the person who sees the glass half empty versus the person who sees it half full, the person who thinks they can do something and the person who gives up too early in life. And to be honest, I have just always sort of had this vision that if I could dream it, I could do it. And I have, and I'm very, very thankful.
You always believe you can do it. People look at you and say, boy, that guy has the golden touch. Do you ever fail?
Well, I think so along the way. But to me, again, the attitude is some people, like a salesperson, will say no is just the beginning of the challenge and the sale. They don't hear no. And I guess I sort of look at the things that I start out to do and I think, yeah, we failed in Fresno, California, miserably. Yet we still picked up ourselves and went on to the next place. And, of course, we've had radio stations that had a problem, and then what we thought was the brightest idea in the world, like Class FM for Detroit when I bought WABX here, that failed miserably. But we changed the format again, and things became successful thereafter. There's always a way to fix a failure or move ahead or learn by our mistakes. And some people will, like I guess I do, I think it's just a matter of finding the right answer and keep trying until you do. I don't like to fail, and I have a hard time doing that. But the few situations we were in, or that I was in, I just figured it was a learning experience.
You seem to relish risk. Most people resist change. And in today's world, the only constant is change. What do you say to people that are afraid to change?
Well, there's no way you can avoid it. So you've got to get with the flow. When the wave comes, you better jump on it and try to stay above it because there's no way to hold it back. And I guess that's my philosophy as I look at the world, and I look at challenges. Again, I can't do things over and over again. My wife will tell you I'm a really bad dancer, except at rock and roll when I can just kind of flail around and jump around, and I don't have to do the same step over and over again. And I guess that's the way I feel in life. I need to find a new path and a new step each time because I can't do something over again.
We're talking to Bob Liggett, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Bob Liggett, and if you looked up in Webster's Dictionary for the definition of entrepreneur, you might see a picture of Bob. What is an entrepreneur, Bob?
Well, I guess it's people who dream, people who want to accomplish a certain goal, whatever that happens to be. I think it describes more a spirit than a job description, and it can be applied to just about any kind of activity. I have always had a little streak in me. I remember in St. Clair Shores, it goes all the way back to Saginaw, actually. I had to be 4 and 5 years old, and a little lady offered to give me a nickel if I would take her newspapers down the flights of stairs for her each week that had built up. And that nickel, I got to go to the candy store, and I bought so much candy for a nickel, I couldn't believe it. I was set for life. And when I got down to the St. Clair Shores area, they had beautiful flowers and cattails out in the swamps that were around these projects that I lived in that were just being built. And I used to take the flowers and the things from these swamps, and I'd go door to door. And I thought, cute little kid, would you like to buy some flowers? And people bought it, just like the lemonade stand. And I got paid for that, and I was just thrilled with that, and I did that to earn a little extra money. Later on, at age 11, I started carrying the Detroit Times when I was out in the Utica area on a bicycle and then ultimately on a motor scooter at 14, and had a very nice big paper route. So as I went through life, these things excited me. Making some money was important to me. We lived in times where we were not exactly the poorest people on the block, but there was a lot of my father was in the advertising business, and there was an awful lot of anxiety there because advertising business would be famine and feast, and a lot of times he'd be changing jobs, and I didn't want to be caught up in that. So I always was looking for a way to make some dough and to be a little independent. And so that kind of got me on the road to solving my problem. I always said I had a good, healthy fear of poverty and having fun doing whatever it took to make that 5 cents or that $5.
Are you born an entrepreneur, or can someone learn to be an entrepreneur?
Well, there are certainly things that you can learn, and I always thought every job I ever had, and I didn't have too many jobs, but every time I worked for somebody, whether it was at WXYZ or whether it was here or in Mount Clemens at WBRB, I was learning. I thought this was school, and even though I went to school to learn about the law and how to deal with that, and I learned a lot of things in schools, I thought everything I was doing was learning so that I could apply it. And I guess that's what I'm thinking of when I think of you can learn skills and apply them to a spirit. And I think the spirit sometimes does come from within. And how you get that spirit, I'm not sure. I think it is a stroke of luck quite often.
Last September, you purchased the Shores Theater in St. Clair Shores. Why?
Well, once again, like eating Big Boys as a teenager and having a chance to buy the company, like listening to the radio and buying the radio stations I used to listen to, I went to the Shores Theater on a Saturday. My folks would give my brother David and I 25 cents. We were set for the whole afternoon long, and every Saturday that's what we did. We went to the Shores Madrid Theater at 9 Mile and Mac, and that's just down the street from where we live now. And I had the opportunity recently. I was always a big movie fan and a buff, and I enjoy the film business and have always followed it and always been involved in the broadcasting business with the film business because we promoted movies and we had deals with movie theaters a lot. And I just loved it. So I wound up thinking the community can use a better theater, and I bought that theater. And now I'm expanding it, and we're attempting to build it into a larger theater. Those plans are underway as we speak.
What other dreams are still up in that noodle?
Well, I wish I could learn how to retire. I wish that I could play golf and maybe get more time on my boat and do some of the things that people do when they retire. I know some terrific people who have retired in recent times, and they just enjoy it. They get up in the morning and have breakfast, and then they go figure out what they're going to do for lunch, and then they go play golf. And I don't get it. I have never been able to quite grasp the relaxation. And I know I don't need to do it because someday somebody's going to tap me on the shoulder and tell me I'm going to have to slow down. And so I want to get ready for that. And that, quite frankly, is what I'm doing. I'm having a wonderful time with my three daughters who are in high school now, and I want to watch them play sports, and I want to try to pass along some of my passions and ideas. And I am dead set to get organized and slow down, but I'm feeling my way and not having as much success at that as I've had at other things.
Who are your heroes?
Well, that's a great question. I have some tremendous heroes, people that I think the world of, some of them on the national and international stage. I think, however, I have a hero in my father, who was a very creative fellow. He was a guy who could bring a smile and tell a story, and he was a tremendous friend to me. We would talk and argue, mostly argue. He was a great old Democrat from the Depression areas, and I was an entrepreneur trying to show him that there are other ways to look at the world besides the government taking good care of us. And we had just a wonderful life. And my mother, who was a teacher, her father, my grandfather, was a school dean for a small community college in Mississippi. And I had the greatest admiration, and I loved the way that his students loved him, and her students, my mother's students, loved her and would call her and tell her how grateful they were for all that they had done in their education. So I suppose those are two real close heroes that I have in my life. And I certainly have a lot of friends and people of great accomplishment and people who have done wonderful things. I couldn't start naming one without leaving somebody off, I think.
What are you the proudest of?
Well, I obviously am most proud of my family. I was married before. I had an adopted daughter and wonderful grandchildren. But I really was not good at being the husband and the mate that I thought I needed. And I finally was very lucky at the end of my career. I shouldn't say the end, but, you know, 17 years ago now, to meet Vicky. And a few years later, we had our children, Emily and Marjorie and Roberta, Bertie we call her. And I couldn't tell you how that has completed my life and made my life full and finished really on a high note.
Your teenage daughters, if we could give everybody true self-confidence, the world's problems would go away. How do you try to give young people self-confidence today?
You know, an awful lot I see in my children seem to come from the DNA. There are differences that I can't explain between the three of them, and they all have their own personalities, and the story is still to be written. All I do is encourage them and love them and let them know that whatever they do, they are loved and cared for.
What advice would you give young people today?
I think the only advice that you can give is to find a passion. Find something that you want to do, some cause that you feel should inspire you, and try to build on that, the fire. I can only say that I've never done anything that I didn't like to do and want to do and enjoyed it I always did it for the joy of it, and the rewards always seemed to come. And so my advice is a little obtuse, I suppose, but it's passion. If you can just find something that you like, and if you're not doing something you like, take a pause, put it on pause for a little while, and go looking for that. Maybe it's in the garden, maybe it's around the world, but find something you love.
Bob, thanks for coming on and sharing your story, and also for the thousands, tens of thousands of people that you've helped by creating jobs for their parents, hundreds, thousands of their parents. Thanks for that. Our guest next Sunday will be the founder of For the Kids Foundation, Norm Yatuma. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because anything is possible. Spohn.